Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you of the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And for the next hour, hopefully they're going to be views of Jerry Petterman, and we're going to be talking about the real danger of an EMP attack, electromagnetic pulse attack, either coming from the sun or coming from the explosion of a thermonuclear device in the high above the atmosphere, 200 to 400 miles above the surface of our country, which would simply wipe out our electric grid. And certainly, if this were to occur, it is quite possible that within 6 to 12 months, 90% of our population would be dead. And why suddenly would anybody even think about something like that? Well, ladies and gentlemen, Congress has. They've had a number of hearings on this. We offer you the 2004 Congressional Commission on the Danger of an EMP Attack, and nobody's ever heard about it. You're not hearing about the danger of an EMP attack. Through regular channels, we don't hear about it night after night. We hear about the 20 children who tragically died in there in Sandy Hook in Newtown, Connecticut. We hear it over and over again. In fact, they even had a choir from the Sandy Hook School sing at the Super Bowl. How did they do that? Why did they do that? Because they want to disarm the American people, because we know we're heading into a period of chaos and crisis, and they don't want you to be able to defend yourselves, and there really are people who want a dictatorship in America. And that, of course, is a subversive group who operate through the Trilateral Commission, the Council on Foreign Relations. They're real. I've been to their headquarters at the CFR. I've been to their files. I've been to files nobody else has ever been to. I've read their publications. They are in charge. There's only a few thousand of them, but they control our government rigidly. They control the right, the left, the conservative, the liberals, the Democrats, Republicans. They have their people counted in key places within the military and banking and the corporations and education, certainly in our churches, control our tax-exempt foundations, and they control the major media outlets. There's only six major corporations that control 90% of the media in America and largely control what the American people think. And that's why we don't hear about the danger of an EMP attack. But ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you that Iran is planning on this. We have from a number of sources that the Iranians actually have now the intermediate range missiles, so they could put the nuclear device well up over our country. They've been over in the Caspian Sea practicing this. Well, if the Iranians are planning on an EMP attack on America, why don't we ever hear about this? Ladies and gentlemen, because I think sooner or later, in one way or another, we're going to be involved in a confrontation with Iran, and an EMP attack would simply destroy our military ability to react. With us is Jerry Petterman. Jerry, thank you so very much for being with us. Could you sort of introduce yourself? And oh, I don't know where Jerry Petterman is. I'm going to ask our producer to call him back again. We seem to have lost him. But basically, of course, Jerry, of course, is going to be talking to us about the danger of an EMP attack on the United States. And I think you have to understand that this is not imaginary. This is very real. And we want you to understand that there is a very real threat to America. And the fact that we're not talking about this, we're not talking about so many of the things that we've talked about in the last hour, is simply a reflection of the degree of control that exists today of what the American people think. Hi, Jerry. How are we doing?
We're doing, Dr. Stan. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. Why don't you tell our listeners just a little bit about yourself, and then we'll get into the discussion of what an EMP attack would mean to America.
Well, Dr. Stan, I'm 62 years old. I started out as a broadcast engineer, became a nuclear engineer, did a few other things, became a wireless design engineer, and that's pretty much it.
All right, fine. You hang on there, and we'll be back in just a moment to talk about the very real threat of an EMP attack. Jerry, you go right ahead. So what about this EMP attack? Is this really a danger, or is this something that's just sort of being hyped?
Are we on live?
We are on live right now. Go right
ahead. Thank you. I heard a break coming up, but I didn't know. Yes, it is very real. It's something that is the greatest folly that man has ever contemplated, whether it's a bunch of Iranians or lunatics somewhere in the world. It's the greatest folly that's ever been conceived of.
All right, fine. Well, now, basically, is there a threat? I mean, who would be able to launch an EMP attack on America? And, of course, there are other ways, of course, we could have the same problem. We could have it as a result of the flares on the sun, couldn't we?
Yes, of course we could. I think any nation that has nuclear capability and that could launch 80 or 90 miles into the atmosphere, all that takes is a sounding rocket from the 1950s to get it up high enough over our country, and we do it from the edge of the ocean or any place on a ship outside the shores of this country. Certainly it could be done, but the reason I said it was the great nuclear greatest folly that we've ever had is that that would trigger a Holocaust like no one has ever imagined. And the person that shot off the thing would also perish.
But how would we know? Couldn't they actually just set this off from a freighter going by and sink the freighter, and there'd be nothing there to be able to tie it into what happened?
Doesn't much matter at that point. Because what you end up having, Dr. Stan, is if you have a real attack like that, You're going to have, with an EMP, you're going to have the meltdown of the grid. And that takes out, in most of electronic devices, that takes out the control systems for our nuclear power plants. We've got 103 of those. And without the ability to pump water, we've got anywhere from 6 to 12 weeks before we have some kind of a problem with those, but that's not the main problem. You see, back in, I think it was 1859, we had the Carrington event, which was triggered by a solar flare, and charged particles did exactly the same thing that a CME, a coronal mass ejection, or an EMP would do from a nuclear weapon, and it melted the wires for telegraph lines. And where those wires came into the offices...
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Jerry was simply saying that certainly an EMP attack or an electromagnetic pulse from the sun would devastate our country. And he was talking about the fact that in 1859, there were some massive solar flares, and the electromagnetic pulse came from the sun, hit America, and certainly decimated. Now, of course, we didn't have electric lines at that time. All we had was the telegraph. But what happened to the telegraph system all across America as we result of the EMP electromagnetic pulse suddenly that came to America at that time? 1859, what happened?
Basically, a lot of prairie fires and building fires. We had what few wire fences that were single-strand barbs and various things that had been invented. Those also sank to the ground and caused various kinds of prairie fires and everything, and that was pretty severe, but we didn't learn anything from it. Because later on, we created a situation where we wired every building in this entire world for electricity without thinking about there being another Carrington event. It burned down the telegraph offices. What's it going to do to every building that we have that has wire in the walls? That's going to be the conflagration that you have initially. You're going to be in the smoke and the dark, because virtually if it's going to be a nation like us, all our buildings are going to burn. That's one reason why I don't think it's ever going to happen from some other nation, because that this entire nation would be a fire. All the buildings would be burning. And that's going to spread around the world. And then you're going to have the nuclear situation very shortly after that, and that's going to blow in the wind. All 103 will go critical because you can't stop it. There's nothing there to pump the water. There's
now
no
you're talking about the nuclear power plants we have. 103
right.
Nuclear power plants. They wouldn't have any electricity to pump the water to cool the nuclear cores. Is this what you're saying? And so that the
yeah.
Nuclear power plants, all 103 of them, could suddenly could begin to break down.
Yes, of course they could. And so what people say, well, get the diesel truck out there and get that. I'm sorry. That has electrical coils to start the engine. It has electronics to control the engine. That doesn't work. There isn't anything that we have that isn't electronically controlled nowadays. So there's not going to be a fire truck coming to your house to put out the fire because your walls are burning. It is literally hell on earth. And that's only one country. Now, a CME from the sun is virtually every country on Earth. So at that point, all 700 in various numbers of nuclear power plants go critical. And it's the end of this planet completely.
Well, why aren't we doing what should be done? Certainly, you can put things into the electric lines, breakers, so that this would not spread all across the country. Why aren't we doing what's logical to try to prevent the devastation from an EMP attack?
I don't think there's anything, you know, and I sound like the guy that knows the sun's going to blow up tomorrow and the planet vaporizes. Dr. Stan, I don't think there's anything we can do except just pray that the CMEs never occur from the sun and that at some point we have enough common sense to take the wires out of the walls of the building because, frankly, who cares about the power plants? You're going to choke to death on the smoke and the conflagration of fires before you ever get to the point of being irradiated. I mean, I don't understand where people think that they could. Maybe that's why Homeland Security doesn't even list this as something to worry about, because it's like everybody's smoking cigarettes in the powder keg room, and nobody's realized it's the powder keg room. It makes no sense. It doesn't to me. I don't understand how we're supposed to survive.
Well, of course, this is the point we try to bring out over and over again, is that when something happens and it just doesn't make sense, then there has to be another explanation, there has to be an X factor, there has to be something else out there that is preventing us from doing what is logical, faced with a very real and life-threatening danger. Because, of course, those people who've studied the danger of an EMP attack, and we have a 4-tape set, we have a DVD, we have a book on this, so we have the Congressional Commission report, and we have the Heritage Commission report, and they almost all say the same thing, that within 6 months to a year, as many as 90% of the American population could be dead. Now, if this is true, and if any of you want the Heritage Commission report, you can get that off the Internet, or we can send it to you. But basically, this is what they say, Heritage Commission report, written by a couple of PhDs who have analyzed this. And the people who have analyzed it are frightened to death, and we've talked to a fair number of them who are making preparations to try to protect themselves, hoping against hope that they'll be able to survive when this very real threat comes to pass. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Right here at the Radio Liberty. And Jerry, you go ahead. Certainly you're talking about fires. Now, were there a lot of fires back in 1859? I'd never heard that before, but were there actually fires at that time?
Oh, absolutely. There were a lot of prairie fires, and there were a lot of the telegraph offices that burned because there really wasn't a lot of telegraph at that time. We really hadn't gotten up and running yet. The Transcontinental Railroad system wasn't really in place yet. This happened before technology really became part of our lives in this country. a lot of people are, I had to laugh when, and I don't mean in a humorous way. Michio Kaku said in one of his quotes that he's the physicist who did string theory. He said it would put us back in the 1800s in a flash.
Well, basically it would be like it was before we had electricity. Now, who is the scientist that you're speaking of who's made that statement?
Michio Kaku. He is the string theorist who has postulated string theory as part of the way the universe works. And he's on a lot of the History Channel and Discovery Channel, and, you know, he has a lot of... Matter of fact, if you'd like, I can tell people where they could read the basic notes on how... what I think about this.
All right, fine. You'll go right ahead and tell them how they could get your information on the threat of an EMP, electromagnetic pulse attack.
Okay. It would be at the website that I created. I have a publishing website. I write books and things. And on that website, it's J.W. Peterman, P-E-T-E-R-M-A-N-N. .com, jwpeterman.com. And if you go there, there is a button, if you will, that is a light blue, and it says technology-CMEs. And if you just click on that, it'll go directly to the thing called Technology Review, Facts to Consider Regarding EMPs and CMEs. And it's a really well-tuned web page that has a lot of links, a whole lot of links. And also it kind of throws information on this as to how I know what I know, because I'm connected by a thread back to the Manhattan Project. I bought out the Nuclear Chicago line, which was developed from the radiation detection products created for the Manhattan Project. And so all of that is on the Technology Review page, and people can see where I came along involved in that.
You know, basically what happens is, of course, the EMP attack hits the power lines, and then, of course, it just goes through and just goes into anything that is plugged into those power lines and simply destroys the structure, the electronic structure, of whether it would certainly be radios or television or certainly computers. Is this basically what happens?
No, honestly, it's not. People think that. They think, well, we could just, you know, unplug the power line and we could be off-grid. It doesn't work like that. It's as if we're next to the sun. And if we, because that's what a nuclear weapon is, it's a ball of fusion, because most of these, they're not going to use an atomic bomb, they're going to use a hydrogen bomb, because that has the greatest effect. And you make them fairly small nowadays. I've seen them up in Pantex Nuclear in North Texas, where they manufacture them. I used to take equipment up there. What happens is that you have this huge impulse of electromagnetic energy, and anything that's metal absorbs the energy. It's not just the wire coming into your house. It's the little wire that connects the frame on your glasses. It's the metal that I'm thinking about. My mouth is going to burn because I have a little implant in my mouth. Anything that's metal, if you have a wristwatch, the wristwatch will burn your arm if it's a metal material. Anything that's metal is going to absorb this energy, and if it's enough of it, and the metal is fairly thin, and let's say it's long, like a wire fence or anything like that, it's going to sag to the ground, melt, and set things on fire. All of the wires in the walls, whether you're attached to the grid or not, those wires are going to sag because they absorb the energy. Somebody said, well, yeah, but they got insulation on them. Oh, good. Then the plastic can burn because the insulation is plastic, and that will set the house on fire.
Hold that thought. Hold the thought. We'll be right back.
Makes you think of Blake, doesn't it? Makes you think of a lot of things. We're going to be in this yet, Mom.
First time in the air.
Brand new, my eye. You know, I threw that song out of Yip Yip Yap Bang 22 years ago.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Jerry Petterman. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And Jerry certainly works with nuclear engineering, and he says that, you know, we're just going to have, if we should either have an EMP attack, or heaven forbid, we should have an electromagnetic pulse attack on America from the sun. Why, of course, why this could have a devastating effect as far as wires are concerned. Now, Jerry, certainly the impulse is a very, very short period of time. Would that be enough, actually, to get the insulation on wires burning? Or would that simply give them just that one instant? Could you really get fires going?
I think you could. If this has more power than the Carrington effect, and one pulse like this, that happened at Trinity when they fired off the first nuclear weapon. The result there was that the old radiation detectors, they couldn't even figure out how much energy was produced or how much electromagnetic flux was produced because all of their detector systems burned out. They really hadn't, I guess they just hadn't expected there to be an electromagnetic flux as big as there was.
Now, basically, radiation. Is this the experiments were done in the South Pacific in the 1950s and 60s?
No, this was 1945 in New Mexico,
okay,
when the first atomic bomb was ignited.
Okay.
And at that point, they didn't even know if the chain reaction would stop with the bomb or if it would take out the world. They just didn't know. I know that sounds kind of stupid now, but they didn't know. And when they went ahead and touched it off, and when they did, all the wires and all everything within about 5 miles of that place melted, and nothing worked. All their detection systems and everything else. So, yes, one impulse from a 100 megaton nuclear weapon blast would cause unbelievable holocaust on this country.
Well, no, basically, and, of course, most of our weapons are 1 megaton. You're talking about 100 megaton. I know the Russians actually have made some weapons that large.
Well, right, if they don't, if we don't get 100, they'll, as some country would set something off at 20 miles above or 40 miles above, and you would get, 300,000 square miles to go up instead of the all of the United States. They'd probably take out a large city like New York or something. You'd have every building in the city burning from the wires sagging and the walls and everything else. And, of course, nothing would work electronically. That kind of really bothers me as far as civilization, too, because if we have a CME from the sun, we don't have anybody who is a cobbler anymore. By that I mean that there's nobody that knows how to just make shoes, and I'm talking about the whole shoe. In other words, any technology, we don't have one person who, if that one person were to survive, that person couldn't build an automobile, that person couldn't build a washing machine. Before we had technology, you had craftspeople who could build something. Well, now everything is cobbled together with every kind of other technology so that it's so intricate, no one person knows anything. And where are all our files on how to do this? Everything's on magnetic discs or optical discs. Optical discs can't be read if the electronics to read them is gone. The libraries will burn from the wires hanging down in the walls for the electricity. So other than being in bunkers, I don't know how humanity would ever survive such a thing.
Well, we do know, of course, that the elite have their underground study facilities. Anybody who doubts that, simply go up on YouTube, certainly go to Google, type in YouTube of Jesse Ventura underground facilities. And, of course,
right,
we've talked to a number of people who've analyzed these. Our good friend Paul Fletcher has analyzed this, but you can check Jesse Ventura's programs. He's actually seen some of them. The elite knows something big is coming. And this is why, of course, they have hundreds of thousands of coffins ready for enough to actually take care of about 2 million casualties. But they have the underground facilities. And we know that about 2 years ago, while you couldn't buy hardly freeze-dry food because they were buying it all up, they're buying up 2 billion rounds of ammunition. What do they know that the rest of us don't know? Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-2295. Give us a call. While the Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Jerry Petterman, and we're talking about the danger of an EMP attack, either from solar or certainly from a nuclear device being detonated in the stratosphere above America. Telephone number, if you have a question or comment, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Now, Jerry, it's my understanding that sometime after the Second World War, where they actually detonated some nuclear devices in the South Pacific, and actually they had certainly impact on the Hawaiian Islands. Do you know anything about those studies?
Yes, I do. I know that some of it's still classified, but The electromagnetic effects went from Bikini Atoll all the way to the Hawaiian Islands. And you can see some of the, just look up some of the Bikini Atoll nuclear tests on the internet, and you see these monster mushroom clouds coming out of the water. It's just unbelievable. Actually, there's one of them that shows a dark image going vertical on the column, the vertical column, and they realized, oh, that was an entire battleship rising up out of the water and flying up into the air. And we know how big battleships, World War II battleships are. But I thought of something during the break. People say, well, maybe the wires and the walls won't melt because they're, you know, there's a number 10 or 12 gauge wire. Okay, I'll go with that. Let's say it doesn't. What about all the little telephone wires, number 18? Wouldn't take much to melt those, and there's lots of those, and they have a lot of insulation, too. And they're encapsulated with a lot of other plastic. So you can get down to fairly tiny wires that would, in fact, melt and set off a conflagration. But I think of these guys that dig the holes and go underground, and they're going to, you know, go survive this thing. Okay, fine. So you're going to stay underground for the next 4.5 billion years? Because if you set off this stuff and you ignite the nuclear power plants, the material coming out of that, some of the material that is created from a nuclear power plant going critical lasts 4.5 billion years, its half-life. And a half-life means that in 4.5 billion years, it's going to be half as radioactive as it is now. So So these guys better learn to live underground and never, ever show their face again. Or they better start figuring out how to build those anti-grav flying saucers and leave the planet, because they don't have much choice. Either way, they have to stay underground and never come out again, or they have to leave the planet. So that's my feeling about that.
Well, now, basically, can't they actually take those nuclear rods if there's an emergency? And what do? Do they put them in water? What do they put them in so that they will not become overly hot? They have facilities there to protect the nuclear rods in case that they are there to actually control the heat, or do they?
Everything in all the power plants, all the General Electric power plants, the rods are automated because nobody can get close enough to them. And that system is electric, and it pulls those rods back out of the carbon blocks. And, of course, you want to insert the rods into the carbon blocks to absorb all of the radioactive particles, the energy that's coming off of the rods. And when you pull the rods back out a little bit, then the rods interact with each other and boil the water. All of that procedure is done electrically because no human being can get close enough to it. And so we've got a basic problem of, again, no control on the rods being able to move them physically. There's no physical way to do it, not by mechanical means, without electricity.
Well, but do the electric plant, do the nuclear generating plants have a backup generators?
Oh, sure, but unless you build Faraday cages around your backup generators, you wouldn't have any means of control. I mean, I tell you how stupid these people really are. All you have to do is look at Fukushima. They put the generators in the basement next to the ocean. The basement was below sea level. What wouldn't have mattered if it was 30 feet above sea level? The wave came in and swamped the generator, and consequently, there was no way to pump the water. And then it got too hot for people to get close to it. And a lot of those people that were pumping the water with fire trucks at that time, because there was no CME or EMP at that time, and you wouldn't get an EMP from a nuclear power plant going critical. That isn't this is a slow pot boiler. This is a problem where the actual rods melt, and then they more of the rods get together, and the more you have, you develop a critical mass, and that becomes 4,000, 5,000, 6,000, 8,000 degrees, and then it begins to percolate and boil off, and some of the nuclear material begins to enter the atmosphere, like the gray smoke that comes out of Fukushima today, still coming out. I just don't see how anything can be done to stop that. Dr. Sand, do you remember we were talking about a few years ago about not in my backyard regarding where we're going to store all the nuclear rods? It was going to be in Yucca Flats or someplace out in Nevada.
Well, of course, they wanted to put in Nevada, but of course, the one thing that we never tried to do was to reprocess the nuclear rods. They wouldn't allow us to do what everybody else was doing. We had to store them underground someplace, and of course, that was because they didn't want nuclear power. They didn't want a solution to the problem. They wanted a problem that was insoluble, and that's basically what we ended up with.
Yes. Well, the reason we don't talk about those rods very much anymore is they were sold off to the federal government for a profit. It was scrap, but it was sold off to the federal government because it weighs almost twice as much as lead, depleted uranium, does. And it makes real good kinetic energy weapons. In other words, it's so heavy that when you fire it and it hits something, it damages it quite a bit.
You're talking about depleted uranium weaponry, shells. And right.
That's correct.
Okay.
So all of this stuff has been used up by our federal government. Up to 40,000 tons has been converted to munitions and been used for the last 10 or 11 years in the wars in Iraq and Iraq and Afghanistan. And consequently, that area is bathed in nuclear particles now because the stuff gets exploded and drifts out into particles and gets in the wind. And so we're beginning to see those particles come in all over the world. And,
well, now, what's happened to the health of the people over there, certainly in Kuwait, in Iraq, in Afghanistan?
Oh, my God. It is so horrible. The number of deformed babies and aborted babies is just unbelievable. I retired and took a job at Home Depot just to have something to do. And a young man came in one day. And I noticed he was probably 24, 25 years old. It was 20 degrees outside. He had flip-flops, Bermuda shorts, and a T-shirt, and was sweating. And I noticed he scratched his head, and hair came out. And he said, "Can you help me? It's so hot." And he took out a cloth and dampened his forehead. And I said, "May I ask you a question?" He said, "Certainly." I said, "Are you in the military?" He said, "Yes." I said, "What was your MOS? Or what was your job?" And he said, "Oh, I did three tours in Afghanistan. I was a tank driver." I said, you spent, what, how long a tour? 18 months each time. Okay, so you spent all that time in a tank. Yes. And I said, "What did they tell you is wrong with you? Because I noticed you're dressed for the summer." He said, But you said it was hot. It's 20 degrees. We can't get it above 60 in the store. Everybody's freezing." He said, "No, I'm hot. And I had, have you been diagnosed?" And he said, "Yeah, they say it's mental." And I said, "I'm a radiation specialist. Have you been tested for DU, depleted uranium?" "Well, I've read about that, but they don't do that. They don't worry about that."
No. We poison an awful lot of our soldiers. You're right. Go ahead.
Yeah, but they gave me some Prozac because I was worrying too much. Okay. I don't think that man is alive today. That was about 4 years ago. I don't think he's alive today. I don't. He had advanced stages of radiation poisoning, and I don't think he ever made his 28th birthday. I was sickened by it, absolutely sickened by it. The story over there was that when we started using the material, a lot of the survey meters went off, the Geiger counters went off, because there was a lot of, when we first got into Iraq, there was a lot of survey instruments and various biological weapon material there, to detectors of various kinds. And people kept complaining, "These things are going off." So the captain would go to the commander would go to the base commander, and it went on up the chain until it got to the Pentagon. And so there was a lot of hell being raised about these things going on. So they pulled the contract on the company that was calibrating these things and gave it to Halliburton. We don't have that problem today. It was a calibration problem.
It wasn't a calibration problem, as you know. We poisoned our troops over there. But then, of course, we sent 58,000 Americans to die in Vietnam in a war we never tried to win. In fact, we got them into the war by a phony Gulf of Tonkin incident, and we sent them into battle, never being allowed to win, taking the same hill time and time and time again, dragging the war on, but it was a wonderful diversion so they could bring in the great society. And the average individual cannot accept the fact that that was a phony war. But it was a phony war, ladies and gentlemen. We never tried to win, and until people begin to understand what's going on today, nothing really makes sense. We do have a caller, and let's see if we can get to him. Okay, Ari's picked that up. But, ladies and gentlemen, I think that there's a very real problem with depleted uranium. Our guest is Jerry Petterman. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-295. And we have Barbara calling. I think this is probably Barbara from Aptos, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I really hate to interrupt this discussion because it's fascinating. But the one thing, and we were always told, you know, we need to prepare for our power outage. But we should also, according to, I'm sorry, your guest.
Jerry.
We should be preparing for fires in our home at the same time and having, like, fire extinguishers available to put out these fires at the same time.
Yes. I would think so. Yeah.
Okay. Because, you know, everybody
would be wise. If everybody could be prepared like that, that would be wise. There's not much else we could do. The water pressure in the water hoses is going to be gone because the electric pumps that pump the water, we're not going to be able to fight the fires with our water hoses or anything. So unless we're, you know, down the hill from a large tank that's, you know, in the air, you'd have some water for a while, but that will never be replaced. So it's kind of a doomsday scenario.
And the thing is that people really aren't talking about so many of these things. Anything else, Barbara?
Well, this is the one thing that nobody has really talked about before. And you're talking about, you know, well, of course, you know, fire trucks aren't going to be able to probably be dispensed because they're not going to be able to start. So people really need to start think about all of the various things that can happen with this. And I've never heard anybody mention the fires that could occur from this. And so it's very important for people to have fire extinguishers in their home. And obviously they are not going to, because they don't have the electronics, they are going to be useful in this kind of an event.
Yeah.
Okay, anything else, Barbara?
No, thank you. That is just something I've never heard before, and I really appreciate him mentioning it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, fine. Well, that's his Barbara calling. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 if you have a question or comment. I think it's so vitally important people understand that there's a very real threat, and I personally believe that if we go to war with Iran, Iran is already making plans for an EMP attack on America. Well, it would be senseless. First of all, why in the world would we want to go to war with Iran? We put the people there, people have forgotten. We toppled the Shah in 1979. We installed the Ayatollahs. Everything's been done to make us believe that there are enemies and they're plotting against us. Ladies and gentlemen, I believe we have our people planted at the highest level of that government and preparing for a war. But then, of course, during the Second World War, why Americans were working with the highest level of the Nazis, and after the Second World War, why, of course, the United States helped 50,000, between 10 and 50,000 Nazis escaped to South America in the Rat Line. You don't have to believe what I say. Go up on the Internet and just type in Rat Line. It was the CIA, MI6, and a satanic cell in the Vatican helped between 10 and 50,000 Nazi war criminals to escape to South America and brought well over 1,000 here to the United States to work on certainly building a new chemical, biological weapons, mind control techniques, and, of course, our space program. Well, let's go to Nick, who's calling from Oregon. Hi, Nick. Do you have a question or comment?
Yes, please. Did I understand, Jerry, to say that the depleted uranium projectiles are made from the spent rods from the nuclear power plants?
Yes. Yes, they
we
are.
Have depleted, it's called depleted uranium. Now, is that from the power plants, or is that from the uranium that is actually they've taken the active uranium out and built the nuclear rods? That's where I thought where it came from.
From the rods. The rods are stored, and they're still 30% radioactive, and they're very heavy and very good to make projectiles. It's a great metal. Trouble is, it's hot.
Okay, I don't know anything at all about it, Nick. But this is what Jerry says. Anyway, I appreciate your calling, and God bless. And somebody
called. I wanted to mention something to you, Dr. Sam.
Let me just quickly mention that Eric from Compton wants to know when my booth will be open tomorrow there at the Long Beach Health Affair. It's at the Health Freedoms Expo, and I will be there from about noon to on tomorrow, and I'll be there all Saturday and most of Sunday. So if you come to the Long Beach Convention Center, well, we'd be glad to see Eric or anybody else. Go ahead. What were you going to say there, Jerry?
I worked for, I was 15 years old, and I was a tour guide in the boyhood home of LBJ. I worked on the ranch, and I saw all these very strange figures.
Hold that thought.
Okay.
Go right ahead, Jerry.
I had an opportunity to meet a lot of these individuals who were guests at the Summer White House and came and went. And one young man was 27 years old at the time, 26, I guess, had black rim glasses and was the press secretary of LBJ. His name was Bill Moyers. And I got to know Bill there when I was a kid. And 10 years later, I was a television director in a public television station, and I worked for a gentleman by the name of Robert F. Schenken. And Robert Schenken was, at that time, head of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And I wanted to write a book similar to Bill Moyers, Listening to America. So I started interviewing a lot of people. And one of the people I decided to interview was Robert Schenken, because he's head of Corporation for Public Broadcasting. I think that's wonderful. So I got a two-hour interview, three separate sessions, total of 2 hours on tape. And I asked him very innocently, because I just didn't know, what did you do before you were with the Corporation for Public Broadcasting? And he said, well, my last position was president of the World Bank.
Well, they all fit in together, they don't they?
Oh, yes. And then he was talking about money, and he was talking about how it was so unfortunate that we lost President Kennedy. But he didn't understand the Federal Reserve System, and that if he'd been, he would have continued his policies, quote, we wouldn't have been able to help all the other countries that we need to help with the World Bank.
Well, certainly, Jack Kennedy certainly was working against the Federal Reserve System. He wanted a silver-backed currency. He might have even gone for a gold-backed currency, and that could not be allowed, and I think that's one reason why what happened there in Dallas. I believe he was killed. There's no question at all that the Warren Commission, half of them were Masons, the other half came to the Council on Foreign Relations. The only person who really, on the Warren Commission, was an honest man, was Congressman Hill Boggs, and they killed him in an airplane crash. We've interviewed Nick Begich, whose father was on the airplane with Hale Boggs, Congressman Boggs. They knew where the plane was, and they refused to allow any rescue efforts to save Congressman Boggs. His punishment for disagreeing with the outcome of the Warren Commission. Hey, we're out of time. God bless. Thanks very much, Jerry. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly a fascinating interview. I really enjoyed it. I'm going to have to check on the background of the depleted uranium. I had always thought that the depleted uranium ammunition came from the uranium that they'd extracted, certainly the very U-23, I've forgotten what it is, but anyway, that they'd actually just taken part of the uranium out of it. But certainly Jerry's probably knows more about that than I do, something I'm going to have to check on myself. Under any circumstances, this is the time when I'm going to have to remind our listeners that my ministry, Radio Liberty, is primarily listener-supported. And if you have any, if would like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, or subscribe to our newsletter, or get the various items that we offer, anything that you could do, we'll appreciate your help. Because we want to maintain our network of over 50 stations a week as we reach out across America, educating people, and at least some people are learning what's going on, and learning to understand the spiritual forces at work. Now, if you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it. Certainly, you need to get our material, certainly on depleted uranium. We have a 4-tape set on depleted uranium illness, on Gulf War illness, which was certainly part and parcel of the Gulf War, of the depleted uranium problem. We actually have a 4-CD set on the assassination of Martin Luther King, a 4-CD set on the assassination of Bobby Kennedy, a couple of 4-tape sets on the assassination assassination of Jack Kennedy. We have a four CD set on the USS Liberty, the American ship, intelligence gathering ship, that was attacked by the Israeli Air Force in 1967. But of course, it was really an American exercise. They wanted to kill all the soldiers there. They wanted to kill them so that they could basically then blame Egypt and they could attack President Nasser's Egypt. Unfortunately, why the Israeli soldier, the Israeli planes didn't sink the ship. They could have sunk the ship. They didn't want to sink the ship. So they dropped their bombs and they missed the ship. And the ship survived. And the people on board were told if they ever revealed what happened that day, they'd spend the rest of their life in prison or worse. And they knew what they were talking about. They knew that they were going to be killed if they told the truth. And 20 or 30 years went by before most of the people on the USS Liberty had the courage to come forward and tell the truth. You can actually hear my interviews with them, certainly at radio, by my talk, our 4-CD set on the USS Liberty. We have a DVD put out by the survivors. We have another DVD put out in Great Britain. They're all available by calling 1-800-544-8927. This is the information you need to get. 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we hope that you'll, if you're in a position to join the Radio Liberty family or help us financially, that you will. And if you're not in a position to do it, please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection, because, of course, this is what's kept us going. A lot of the other people who have done what I've done are no longer here under one's guise or another. There have been lawsuits against them. They've been killed. Their families have been killed. I'm not talking imaginary, ladies and gentlemen. I've been at this for 50 years, and I've seen what's happened to people who've actually had the courage to speak out, or maybe the foolishness to speak out. Maybe it's better just to not do anything, just to sit back and enjoy good life and as long as you can. But, ladies and gentlemen, for one reason or another, I'm doing what I'm doing and would appreciate your help and support. And we want you to tell others about our program. We want you to go to our website, RadioLiberty.com. RadioLiberty.com, where you can listen to our programs, our live programs 4 hours a day, our archive programs 24 hours a day. And you can hear us certainly on with an iPad, an iPhone, an Apple TV, all sorts of means. You can hear us simply on the telephone, the afternoon program. Again, our number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage is RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. And then we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival. Pray for but please pray for Radio Liberty, our provision and protection. We're going to be away next tomorrow and till Monday. May the Lord be with you.
Let us all be grateful.